Today is the Sunday that corresponds to what in more traditional churches they call the Feast of the Ascension. This is a Sunday that commemorates the story at the very end of Jesus' earthly ministry, what you might call Jesus' final stunt, when Jesus, having conquered death through his resurrection, goes on to conquer gravity by floating up into heaven. Over the years, in my work as a pastor, I have found myself dealing with questions about the Easter story. In my first two congregations, I had to address fears that I might not believe in the resurrection. And then I came to Montclair, and I had to address concerns that I might actually believe in the resurrection. The world is a fickle place, right? But for my money, when it comes to believability, Easter has nothing on the ascension. I mean, coming back to life is one thing, but ascending like a hot air balloon? For me, that's even harder to believe. For one thing, gravity. I mean, at least as I've experienced gravity, it is as ubiquitous as God's love. I have never found a place where gravity didn't apply. And I get that this all happened a long time before an apple ever fell on Isaac Newton's head. But still, Sir Isaac didn't invent gravity. He just found a way to describe it in a way that made sense, right? Everybody already knew what was going on, though. But even if you can explain the ascension in a way that gets around the laws of physics, there is a cosmological problem with the story. To wit, it assumes heaven is situated somewhere directly above the Mount of Olives, if you are reading Luke's account in the books of Acts, or above Galilee, if you are reading Matthew's version of the same story. Now, to be fair, I should point out that those who believe this morning's lesson from the book of Acts records an historical event, these people are not unaware of the problems I've just presented. What they would say is that the ascension is a miracle, no less believable than turning water into wine or curing leprosy with the touch of a hand. If you believe in miracles, it is no stretch to believe in the ascension. And as for the cosmological problems, those can be explained by saying that in the ascension, God is speaking to humanity in ancient mythic language, which is a language most people understand. No one would argue that there is a divine elevator between the Mount of Olives and the Pearly Gates. Rather, our more conservative and literal thinking sisters and brothers would say God could have transferred the risen Jesus to the heavenly realm while he was eating lunch on any given Thursday. But God chose instead to end the story in a dramatic way so that the disciples and later the church would have a better understanding of who Jesus is. And that second point, the idea that God is speaking here in mythic language, that, I believe, is a place of agreement between those who read this passage with a healthy dose of skepticism and those who read it as a journalistic account of what actually transpired. We both agree that the story makes use of mythic images and cannot really be understood unless we understand this archetypal language. After all, Jesus was hardly the first person to experience such a final act. Both Enoch and Elijah ascended into heaven, and their stories are recorded in the parts of the Bible that we Christians call the Old Testament. And in Greco-Roman mythology, Hercules, who, like Jesus, by the way, has a divine father and a human mother, Hercules also ascends to heaven, like Jesus, from the top of a mountain. Now, a lot of the details are different, but the stories are basically the same, with a holy man slipping free of the chains of gravity and making his way to heaven. Regardless of what we believe about the historicity of the story, it seems worth unpacking the mythic language. We should ask what it all means. In fact, I believe asking what it means is more important than asking if the ascension actually happened. When we answer questions about if the ascension happened, then we're really asking and answering questions about ourselves. Are we progressive or are we conservative? Are we worshiping at the altar of rationality, or are we informed by magical thinking? But if we ask why the biblical narrative includes the story of an ascension, then we're no longer asking questions about ourselves. Rather, we're asking questions about God. And that seems very important to me. So, let's ask, why the story of the ascension? Well, the beauty of mythic language is that it can have several layers of meaning, and perhaps the most basic reason for the ascension, as far as I can see, the most basic reason is to associate Jesus with the other great, holy, and human divine humans who have been so privileged. The story of the ascension means to tell us that Jesus was great in the way Enoch and Elijah and Hercules were great. One might also observe that the ascension provides a nice bookend to Jesus' birth. If God came into the world at Christmas, then humanity went into heaven at the ascension. And there's a lot of hope in that proposition. In fact, until this week, I would have ended the sermon here. By ascending to heaven, Jesus, who is God with us, becomes Christ, who is us with God. Incidentally, I'm pretty sure that when I preached on the ascension last year, I explained the story by saying this is when the Jesus of history becomes the Christ of faith. And I still believe that. But as I was preparing for this sermon, I began to suspect that there is something more. This week, when I read the story of the ascension, I was struck by how in the narrative, Jesus, after his resurrection, he doesn't die a second death. After all, the risen Christ could have resumed his ministry. Or he could have gone back to being a carpenter. Or he could have married Mary Magdalene and moved to France, like what happens in the Da Vinci Code. Indeed, one could argue that Jesus would actually have done more to conquer death if after Easter he'd just stuck around. As it is, one cannot say that Jesus was unaffected by the crucifixion. I mean, he still ended up in heaven prematurely. If Jesus had continued his life for another 30 or 40 years, accomplishing more, teaching more, healing more people, resisting the power of empire more, that might have been pretty awesome. He would have died again, but he could have died a peaceful death, the peaceful death of one who was seriously in charge, who had lived a long and full life, but instead, there's this ascension, and because of the ascension, Jesus is deprived of the satisfaction of living well into old age as a human and going out with his boots on. Instead, he is assumed into heaven, and there is no ending to the story. And that is the beauty of it. Thanks to the ascension, the Jesus story is a story without an ending. We don't know how it all ends because the story is still going on. Earlier in the sermon, I mentioned the fact that Matthew and Luke place the story of the ascension in different places. Matthew tells the story as happening in Galilee in the north. Luke puts it on the Mount of Olives just outside Jerusalem in the south. The Gospel of Mark doesn't even mention the ascension in his version of the story, and neither does the Gospel of John, except that in the Gospel of John, the story ends with the following words, and these words take place after Jesus has just had breakfast with his disciples on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. The Gospel of John ends like this. This is the disciple who is testifying to these things and has written them, and we know that his testimony is true. But there are also many other things that Jesus did. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. I'm starting to think that's another way of describing the mythic language of the Ascension. There is no end to the story. Sure, the protagonist has gone to heaven, but the story goes on. And I find that really comforting. It's tempting to believe that the story of our faith might come to an end for some reason. I know that there was a time when I believed honestly and sincerely and earnestly that if I no longer believed that the Ascension was an historical event, that the story of my faith would come to an end. But I've changed. And guess what? The story goes on. I've heard it said that if we embrace a scientific worldview, such that if we understand the universe to have had its origin in a Big Bang, or we consider life on Earth to have evolved into existence in ways not described in the book of Genesis, or if we own the fact that Noah's flood is a retelling of a Sumerian myth, that if we believe all that, the story of our faith will grind to a halt. But I believe all that. And the story goes on. Over the years, I certainly have known folks who fear that changes in the life of the church might extinguish the story of the faith. If we change the music, or if people stop attending our particular worship service, or if we hire the wrong pastor, or if our denomination ceases to exist, then the story of our faith will have its final chapter. But churches come and go. Denominations wax and wane. Theologies are constructed and they crumble. And still, the story of our faith keeps adding chapters. There are those who fear that the story of faith is intrinsically tied to the American story, and who therefore consider jingoism to be a divine language. But let me tell you, empires rise and fall, and every empire considers itself to be the bearer of God to the world, but the ongoing story keeps proving the empire wrong. The story goes on, despite the growth and atrophy of empires. The story will survive even the most difficult and challenging of human events. The story will survive the election of even the craziest politician. The story will survive injustice. The story will survive oppression. The story unfolds even in the ugliest and darkest moments of human history. And because the story survives, we will survive, because we are written into the story of our faith, and the story of our faith keeps adding chapters. The story of our faith goes on despite our wacky beliefs and despite our incredulity. The story survives despite the fact that humans are invited to participate in the writing of the story. The story survives our attempts to rationalize that which cannot be explained. Our story survives. It transcends our tendency to write others out of the story. It outlasts every human fad and all of our dramas. We come and go, but the story abides. My prayer for you is that you will listen to the eternal story. And that as you listen, you will find yourselves written into the story. For your life has been woven into the divine narrative, which is as eternal as the one whose life goes on. And having found your story woven into God's story, I pray your story is one of adventure and one of learning, of wonder, a story that brings wisdom, a story that endures through sadness and pain, a story that brings meaning and creates beauty, a story that never ends, a story that ascends to eternal joy. Amen.